Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour has written a lovely book, The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee. Maria Mills begins the book saying, in the summer of 2005, I was having coffee at Burger King with Harper Lee. By that time, we were friends and next-door neighbors in her hometown of Monroeville, Alabama. She met her in 2001. Remember when so many cities were doing if all the people in a certain city read a certain book? In Chicago, the book was To Kill a Mockingbird, and she was working for the Chicago Tribune. So she went down to Monroeville, Alabama to look at where Harper Lee had grown up and to meet some of the locals. And amazingly, she got a chance to meet her sister and then to meet Harper Lee and forge this great friendship with him. So this is a story about Alabama and To Kill a Mockingbird and the reclusive Harper Lee and why she might be that way. And we don't know very much about her. So it's the book she reads and what she holds near to her and all of her friends who became friends of Maria's as well. Maria, a former reporter, feature writer for the Chicago Tribune. She was a member of the staff that won a Pulitzer for a series about O'Hare Airport entitled Gateway to Gridlock. This is her first book. She was raised in Madison, Wisconsin. She's a graduate of Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, and she has also studied in Paraguay, Spain, and Sweden. She lives in Chicago now and often spends time in Madison and in her father's hometown of Black River Falls, Wisconsin. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I know many of you, as I'm in this category, absolutely love To Kill a Mockingbird, and the book had a huge influence on your life, and you love Gregory Peck. And then we're talking at a great time because Harper Lee is publishing her second book, Go Set a Watchman, which will come out in July. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. So we have a lot to talk about this hour. Welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is at K Dunn Show. Hi, Maria. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you're where? You're in Birmingham?
I'm in Birmingham, Alabama.
Wow. Well, I'm surprised you don't have a touch of a Southern accent by now.
I learned a lot of expressions I didn't know until I was fortunate enough to spend time in their hometown.
Yes, and you learned some great expressions that are in your book as well, which is wonderful. You know, I read the first sentence again of your book, and I'm thinking, that must astound you, too. There you are at Burger King with Harper Lee, and you've been to McDonald's with her and the Duck Pond and all over the place.
She was so down to earth, and that was clear from the beginning. And McDonald's, yes, was a favorite spot, and Burger King occasionally for coffee or a burger. She often would drive her sister, Alice Finchley, whom she called Atticus in a skirt, to her law practice, and would be behind the wheel of her Buick and just say, "Driving Miss Alice." That was one of the things she did when she was home in Monroeville.
Mm-hmm. And it was not only them, but all these people, Tom, the Methodist minister, and other friends of theirs. It was interesting because here you are, a fairly young reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and these people are, Alice is in her 90s and Harper Lee is in her late 70s, and your friendships are with people who are much older than you are.
That was one of the really interesting things and privileges of spending all that time there. They had the time for me, for one thing, and I had a chance to get to know them in a way that I think is rare in journalism these days. We had the luxury of a leisurely pace and time for things to unfold in their own time.
I had no idea, Maria, that so many people make a pilgrimage to Monroeville every year. I mean, there are a lot of people who go there, aren't there?
I didn't either until I went there the first time back in 2001, as you mentioned. People from all over the world, and they come throughout the year, although there always is a rush in the spring, late spring, when the play is put on every year at the courthouse, the interior of which, the courtroom, was replicated for the movie. And so an awful lot of people enjoy going in there and seeing that very familiar courtroom to anyone who's seen the movie.
Mm-hmm. But the town has changed. She laments the fact that the town has changed.
She does. And, you know, even in the when the filmmakers were scouting Monrovia as a possible location to film the movie, which came out in 1962, the book, of course, came out in 1960. Even that long ago, they decided that too much had changed from the 1930s, when the novel and the movie take place, for them to be able to film there. And so they filmed in Hollywood. There's been a lot of building. The town is about 6,400 now, considerably bigger than it once was. Neil Harper used to say it was 100 miles from anywhere, well off the beaten track, but a different place than the Macomb, the fictional Macomb of the novel, certainly.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to 2001. You were working for the Tribune. If Chicago read the same book, and it was To Kill a Mockingbird, Mayor Daley loved the book. So you went down there to do a background piece. Was the book also one of your books that you simply must read in a lifetime? Was it near and dear to you before you made this journey?
Well, I did love the book. I wasn't someone who had been planning a pilgrimage or anything like that, or reread it every year. But I had loved reading it as a ninth grader at West High School in Madison. I remember feeling transported the way I think that novel does to those red, dusty streets, the red clay streets in Macomb County of the novel. And, of course, didn't expect to meet Harper Lee or her sister when I was sent there, knew that they were private, and wrote a letter to Alice Lee, who managed her sister's affairs, to let her know that I was coming and why, but was most surprised when I had the chance to meet her and then her sister.
And it came down to knocking on the door, which was obligatory, I guess. You must have been nervous, and by golly, Alice answered the door.
She did, and I was not one who relished the idea of knocking on someone's door like that. And people who remember the old comedy sketch, perhaps, where the door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman is knocking on a door and says, "Nobody home, I hope. That was pretty much my feeling. I thought that I would be on my way, would not get an answer. But in fact, this wisp of a woman, which was Alice Lee, answered the door, said she'd received my letter, and invited me in to this rather modest home that they shared for many years there in Monrovia.
Filled with books.
Oh, they were fighting a rising tide of books all the time. I think didn't care much about a lot of material things. The decor probably hadn't changed much from the 50s, but loved their books, and they filled every room.
Mm-hmm. And Alice, particularly fond of British history, Nell Harper Lee, more fond of fiction, is that fair?
Well, yes, Alice Lee tended to stick to nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nell maybe read more broadly in that sense. It was great fun to discuss with her. For example, Eudora Welty was someone who would come up in conversation now and then. She spoke about Faulkner. She tended not to read a lot of things that had come out recently. Occasionally she would. They both, I think, were of the school that having a few books going at any one time is the way to do it.
And then their conversations and that of their friends, you write, would be laced with references to those books. It was a very literate group of people you were friends with.
They had a wonderfully eclectic circle of friends, some probably more book-minded than others, and that was one of the things I appreciated about both of them. One of their good friends was a librarian, Dale Welch, a woman who since has died, and she and Nell Harper would often discuss books. Other friends were less book-minded, but fellow adventurers on a day trip in the countryside or the misadventures that would arise every now and then. They were both great explorers, even in those later years when I knew them, and loved to get behind the wheel of Nell's Buick and just head for open road.
Mm.
And of course, for me, one of the pleasures was that I think the Monroe County they were seeing out those windows was different from the one that I saw as somebody who was new to that area. A lot of times they were seeing a house that no longer stood there, but that once did, and that had stories that they related, sometimes involving their parents and grandparents or the characters around that town that they remembered growing up. You can imagine what marvelous storytellers they were, and I just savored every minute of that.
You must have had to pinch yourself frequently, because here's this woman who everybody's been trying to get to speak and has done so rarely over a 50-year period of time, and here you are driving around town having coffee, feeding the ducks, At one point, and it was probably with a note of sarcasm, although a note of truth, I think you were called a class act journalist by Nell Harper Lee, which is probably why they let you in. But why do you think they let you in?
Well, of course, in her tongue-in-cheek, I would say, comment about being a contradiction in terms, a class act journalist, I always thought, well, thank you, I think.
Right.
She certainly had had a mixed experience with journalists over the years, and I was fortunate that there really was a rapport there from early on with both of them. I think having met Alice first, that I know was the reason that I got a call in my motel room at the Best Western soon after from Nell Harper, arranging to meet for the first time. She said, you've made quite an impression on Miss Alice, and I wonder if we might meet. And came to my room at the Best Western the following day, and was interested in knowing who I had talked to around town, what they'd had to say. Also interested in knowing more about what was happening in Chicago with that community read. And when I mentioned to her in that first conversation that I had so enjoyed Gregory Peck's comments about the filming of To Kill a Mockingbird, Gregory Peck, who of course won an Oscar for his role as the Atticus Finch character. And I remember when I mentioned that, she leaned forward and her eyes danced, and she said of Peck, isn't he delicious? And it was heartwarming to know that the filming of that movie was, for her, also the beginning of some lifelong friendship, certainly with Gregory Peck and his wife Veronique and their children, also with Horton Foote, the Texas playwright, who himself won an Oscar for adapting the novel for the screen.
Mm. Also with, I remember we had her on the air some years ago, a scout who lost her father, and I think you say this in the book as well, and he remained friends with her, for the woman who played Scout.
That Gregory Peck did, yes, I understand that was the case. There's a documentary I recommend to anyone who's interested in Gregory Peck, and particularly regarding the movie, called Conversations with Gregory Peck. In it, he talks a good bit about his experience meeting Nell, meeting her father, who served as the inspiration for the Atticus Finch character.
Mm-hmm. And you said that conversations, reflections about their father would be fairly prominent in Alice and Nell's conversation. Not as much their mother, but they talked frequently about their father?
They did, and you know, it was interesting. He was still a presence in their lives all those years later. I think they had such affection and respect for him. He had lived long enough to see his daughter win the Pulitzer Prize for the novel. Not long enough, unfortunately, to see the movie, although he did meet Gregory Peck when he came to town. And from what I understand, Mr. Lee, as he was known around town, was amused by the fuss created in Monroeville when Hollywood came to town, and many of the women in town suddenly had a need to visit the wee diner where Gregory Peck had been spotted. I think he was someone who, the way they described him, did not put much stock in celebrity. In achievement, yes, but not in celebrity for its own sake.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you certainly see that in how Nell Harper Lee has approached her own celebrity. I think not terribly impressed by her own or other people's, is by achievement. I think that's one reason the Pulitzer Prize was still meaningful to her all those years later. They, of course, were still getting just a stream of correspondence into the little post office box they had on the town square in the post office. And all those years later, still getting that sense from readers and teachers and others of the impact of the book on so many people.
Why? Why is it so many years later, do you think, Maria?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and one of the things that's been just a joy about touring again now that the paperback is out of my book has been hearing people's stories about that and how much it varies, I think, depending on the person. I think a lot of it is that she evoked childhood in a particular time and place so vividly that it has a hold on people, although some people will say, this is the reason I became a lawyer, or this is the reason I became a writer. This is the kind of father I want to be. There are people approach it from different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. You had an opportunity to really glimpse them at some precious moments. Some of them are quite funny, but you also got an insight as to how they're viewing the modern world. Please tell us about the day and it happened to be the day of the Janet Jackson Super Bowl, that you were watching the Super Bowl with Alice and Nell.
This was at the home of good friends of theirs, and as many people can recall, I think that was when there was what was termed a wardrobe malfunction during Janet Jackson's Super Bowl performance, and people glimpsed more than they planned to, and I think that was something that was viewed with both amusement and consternation at the time. Both of the Lees talked about... Well, as Alice put it early on, she said, "We are not of the 21st century, hardly even the 20th." Nell Harper Lee used to refer to my laptop as my magic box, but she said that in such a way that you could see the quotation marks hanging in the air, meaning you're maybe not so magic box. I think, as a friend of theirs said, they tended to catch up to technology only when strictly necessary, and for the most part would have liked to have stopped around the time of manual typewriters. I remember seeing a manual typewriter in their home from those earliest visits. And I think, you know, both had an appreciation that technology helps us to communicate, but it also can stand in the way of more meaningful communication. They both, for example, were beautiful letter writers, really practitioners of that old-fashioned art of letter writing that you don't see so much anymore. But they were not of the email persuasions, for sure.
And yet, they needed the fax machine because neither was hearing very well, and you would frequently communicate by sending them a fax.
That's true. Even though I was living right next door with their blessing, I rented the house next door to theirs for 18 months, beginning in the fall of 2004. But because of their hearing difficulties, it was better to fax, for example, than to call and have Nell Harper arrive at the phone just as the final ring was ending. And so, for example, the night before she was returning to New York, and she would take the train back and forth for many years between her apartment in New York City and the home she shared there with Alice in Monroeville. So I had given her a little care package for the train and also my copy of E.B. White's This Is New York that describes the New York she went to as a young woman striking out to try her hand at becoming a writer. And I got a fax back from her that evening saying, "You are a very wicked young person." I have, and I'm paraphrasing here, but she said that she had opened that E.B. White book. She was a fan of his and wept at the first sentence. And of course, she said, would be up late reading that book. And I think he captured in there part of the appeal of New York City for a young woman from small town Alabama who decided to try her hand at becoming a novelist there and who had a friend already in New York City at that point by the name of Truman Capote.
It's just a remarkable story. And it's just as fascinating now as it was when the book came out. It's fascinating, the whole thing. We're going to welcome phone calls for Maria. Our guest this hour is the author of just released in paperback, The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee. Maria Mills is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Maria is from Madison, actually. Grew up in Madison, so she has strong Wisconsin roots. And we also want to ask her if she knows anything about this sequel to Kill a Mockingbird. Harper Lee is publishing a second book, which is going to be published on July 14, the manuscript rediscovered last year. I know Harper Lee is in assisted living right now, but I will have to ask Maria what in the world she might think of that book being published and whether or not Maria knows very much about that particular book. So any questions you have about Harper Lee and her sister Alice, Maria has a was invited to be really a close part of their close circle of friends and spent quite a bit of time with both of them, starting off when she was researching Monroeville, Alabama for a feature she was doing, Mario was doing for the Chicago Tribune. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mario Mills, our guest this hour, and we're going to take phone calls. 800-486-8655. Ed in West Dallas. Hi.
Hi. Well, now that you track down Harper Lee, maybe you can track down Thomas Pynchon for us in New York. It's Flynn's Day today, and I think those of us that are have an interest in Joyce want to know if Harper Lee had a copy of Finnegan's Wake, Ulysses, or Portrait of the Artist in her house. What are her hobbies? And you say that she takes these trips, but it sounds like they're just in and around, or when she was able to, in and around Alabama.
Well, Kathleen, you can help me make sure I've got all of those questions
okay.
in mind. The answer to the first one is not that I know of regarding Joyce, although certainly with the volume of books she and her sister had, it's entirely possible. She spoke more in terms of American writers about Eudora Welty, William Faulkner, Mark Twain. She was a great fan, if you go across the ocean, of Thomas Macaulay's. Mm-hmm. In terms of the trips they took, one thing she and her two sisters did, Alice Finchley, and then also Louise Lee, their other sister, the middle sister, think about the 10 years following the publication of Mockingbird, those three sisters would take an annual trip together. They were in New England at one point. They took the Delta Queen down the Mississippi. And I remember Alice being amused in saying that someone who had joined them for part of one recounted to someone else, he said, "Those three can't agree on anything, not even the temperature, and they have the best time." I think they were all three distinct personalities. That's something that those who knew all three of them have commented on. Unfortunately, I didn't have the chance to know Louise. She was ailing already by the time I met Alice Lee, the oldest of the four Lee children, and Nell Harper, the youngest. But they were fascinating as sisters. That was one of the things I really wanted to give people a sense of in the book, was how entwined their lives were and yet how different their personalities were. I think it's interesting that when you think about it, Nell Harper made famous the world over the story of a principled small-town Alabama attorney, and Alice lived it.
Yes.
They both, I think, that came from a well of respect and affection for their father and their experiences in that hometown of Monroeville, and yet led them on quite different paths when you think about it.
So did you, after you got to know her, would you agree with Nell's assessment that Alice was Atticus in a skirt?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
She was. Oh, absolutely. And she was for so many people. You know, I remember when I first moved there, people saying, to the rest of the world, Harper Lee, of course, is so well known, and Alice, if known at all, is known as the sister of. But among their good friends and family, and within Alabama, where Alice was a respected attorney, certainly, Alice, in many ways, was the star. She, I think, like their father, Mr. Lee, who again served as the inspiration for the Atticus Finch character, was a touchstone for a lot of people. She was somebody who, as somebody said, didn't need to preach to give a sermon. The way she lived her life was its own, and had such a twinkle in her eye. Mm-hmm. I think for Nell Harper too, she was a guiding light for many years. She was a voracious reader herself, although when I asked her, I think Alice knew more about England than most people over there would. And I asked her if she'd spent much time traveling there. I knew that her sister had. And she just ran her hands along the spines of books about England and said, "This is how I've traveled." She did it by book. Was fascinated by the law and had kind of that a certain sensibility that the practice of law was what her contribution could be in that small town, along with being very active in the Methodist Church, as their father had been.
You write early in the book, at one point you asked Alice about Nell's long public silence. "I don't think any first-time author could be prepared for what happened. It all fell on her," Alice said, "and her way of handling it was not to let it get too close to her." "And what about you?" asked. The first question everyone had about her sister, why didn't she write another book? Alice leaned forward in her office chair. "I'll put it this way. When you've hit the pinnacle, how would you feel about writing more? Would you feel like you're competing with yourself?" Interesting answer. But now we find out that she did write more, and I want to hear at least your thoughts a little bit more about why so quiet about her masterpiece and what you think about this new book that's coming out. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it, Go Set a Watchman.
Which has been described as both a prequel in some quarters and a sequel in others, because as I understand, it takes place, is told from the perspective of Scout, who is the young tomboy who narrates, of course, To Kill a Mockingbird. But apparently this is from her perspective as an adult now, returning to that town, I believe, in the 1950s. I was surprised as anyone, I believe. Nell Harper had talked about how much work it was to go from her initial efforts and how much time to what eventually we all came to know as To Kill a Mockingbird. But we hadn't talked about that by name. And, of course, she had always said that she didn't want to publish another book. She had said, "Well, I've said what I have to say in To Kill a Mockingbird, and I won't say it again," and that she wouldn't want to go through all the publicity again for all the money in the world. So I was surprised on a number of fronts when that news arrived.
But she is now, is she able to speak now? She's in assisted living, isn't she? And so is Alice.
And Alice unfortunately passed away.
Oh, she did.
In November. She did. But at the age of 103.
Oh,
so
my
certainly
gosh.
A long life. And she had practiced law until she was 99.
Wow.
Just with such a sharp mind and still with that sparkle in her eye intact. And Nell Harper Lee, unfortunately, had a serious stroke in 2007 and has been unable to live at home since then, is in an assisted living center in that area. And, you know, there are certainly friends who've had concerns about the circumstances under which all of this is happening,
right.
Others who feel that there isn't a problem. I would be in the school of those who do have concerns and questions about it. I think the fact that she didn't publish over the years is distinct, though, from not having written. Certainly, there were any number of things that she had spent time on over the years. In the 1980s, for example, she spent time in Alexander City, Alabama, working on what it sounds like would have been a nonfiction account of a series of suspicious killings in that area. Perhaps some have speculated an In Cold Blood kind of treatment of that. She, of course, famously helped her friend Truman Capote research what became In Cold Blood. And she had discussed over the years different things that she had either worked on or thought about working on, but it was a surprise to everyone I know when this news came about.
And speaking of Truman Capote, I believe you watched
the first of the two movies.
Yeah.
Yes. And some people maybe remember that there were actually two movies that came out about that period, not long after the other. The first one starring Philip Seymour Hoffman as Truman Capote and Catherine Keener playing Harper Lee. The second one, Sandra Bullock played Harper Lee, and Toby Jones, a British actor, played Truman Capote. So it was the first of those two that we watched together. This was back in 2005, I believe. And with hearing being difficult, we watched it at quite a slow pace, with me stopping the tape and then loudly turning to her and loudly enunciating what the last couple of snippets of dialogue had been, so that she could hear it. And I remember her saying that evening that Hoffman would win an Oscar for his performance, which of course he did. I also felt that that was a glimpse at how unnerving it could be to be in her situation all those years of being so beloved and yet very little known. She was aware that plenty of people would form their impression of her based on that movie, and then the one that came after it.
Right.
And I think sat down to watch it with some apprehension. It seemed relieved afterwards. She said that a lot of it, there was only one scene that matched her memory in terms of events as they unfolded with her and Truman in Kansas, and that was the perp walk, as we would call it, but that she did feel the filmmakers had captured something essential about Capote. It was interesting. She went to Kansas with him at a time when To Kill a Mockingbird was at the publisher but hadn't yet come out. And he and Truman Capote, of course, was established as a writer already and was venturing off to Kansas to do research for what became In Cold Blood with his most able research assistant, Nell Harper Lee. I think he was such an outsized personality, despite being a diminutive person, that he knew it would be difficult, probably, to conduct some of the interviews he wanted to do. And she, I think, was someone who could put people at ease around a kitchen table conducting a lot of the interviews they did. And they, of course, unbelievably had lived next door to one another as young children. The thought of those two imaginations being next door is remarkable.
Yeah, it is. Ed, thanks very much for your call. Marie in Lake Geneva, hi.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hello.
Yes, the first time I've called into a program like this.
Well, thank you.
I just have a comment. You know, your last speaker about senses, and it kind of ties in to Kill a Mockingbird. I find Wisconsin in the last 3 years has really changed. And actually, senses can be solved through Obama's health care, because you got to have a health care card in order, you know, to be part of this society. You know, you need a health care. There's a lot of immigration here, Europeans, Middle Eastern, and To Kill a Mockingbird shows social economic change. And I find that in 3 years that it's happening to my community. And, you know, if someone immigrates here, first of all, they have to have a valid driver's license. They have to have a working permit. They, you know, it's upsetting. And they aren't abiding, I feel, by the laws.
Let's talk about social stratification, which is, you know, there's a big part of where people are in To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, where Atticus and his family are in terms of their income, where the Yules are in terms of their income. There's a lot about poverty and segregation, and you get a really strong sense of the fabric of a community and where people are in terms of income and in terms of hardship in that book.
She captures that so vividly, including that the Yule family, for example, which lives near the town dump and is looked down upon by many of the people in town, of the other white residents of town, that part of the racism you see with Bob Yule, for example, seems to be that he wants someone, he doesn't want to be at the bottom of the heap in terms of that social stratification, and turns to Tom Robinson, the African-American man who is falsely accused of raping a white woman in the story, as someone that he can consider a notch below. It's interesting even now, I think. She captures within, for example, the white residents of Monroeville, the stratification even there, that it certainly wasn't just white residents and black residents, but how acutely aware many people were of their status, upper middle class, middle class. Of course, at that time during the Depression, so many people were living what we would consider very modest existences, and yet there was that sense of social class.
Yeah. Bob in Claybakes. Hi, Bob.
Thanks for having the show today.
Mm-hmm.
There was a documentary I watched sometime in the last couple months, and Boo was in the title, and it was about Harper Lee, and there was quite a few interviews with Miss Alice in it. I really got a kick out of her voice.
That raspy voice of hers, yes.
Yeah, and I just wondered if they had either of them had a chance to ever comment to you on what they thought about that documentary.
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think Alice, I was so pleased that Alice, I think, was the keeper of the family history in many ways. And in my case, we spent long hours, often on a Sunday afternoon, trying to capture as many of those stories as she was willing to share. Nell Harper herself would say, well, let's ask Alice. That was the default position if someone wanted to recall a family story or some of the town history. And so I think you got a sense probably in listening to her of what a remarkable storyteller she was in her own right. And, of course, she remembered Harper Lee and Nell Harper Lee's childhood from the perspective of someone who was nearly 15 years older. I can remember Alice, for example, saying that of Truman as a little boy, he was a funny-looking little thing, and saying that, and of course, Nell was a child as well at that time, so remembers it from that perspective. Alice remembered that their father, at the end of the day, would look around and say, has anyone put Truman out? He liked to spend time underfoot in the Lee household, I think.
Thanks much.
Thanks, Bob, very much for your call. We have some lines open. We're talking about Nell Harper Lee this hour and with the author of The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee. Maria Mills is our guest. She lived next door to Alice and Nell for quite some time and kind of kept going back and forth from Monroeville, Alabama to Chicago, and then eventually just lived next door to them for 18 months. And the book is a result of her reflecting on their reflecting on growing up and their relationship and books and their father and family and fame and all of that. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Maria Mills, author of The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee, is our guest this hour, and we're welcoming more phone calls if you'd like to join the conversation. Questions you have about Nell Harper Lee, how she dealt with celebrity, why she's been so secretive, the publication of her sequel to Mockingbird, which will be in bookstores in July, actually, and the lovely reflections of Maria in her book, which is out in paperback just now and has been a New York Times bestseller. We would love to hear from you. You were also, if you would, because this plays a part in your going back and forth to Chicago and also shows some of the compassionate side of Nell Harper Lee. You were dealing with lupus and some fairly serious medical issues while you were in Monroeville that necessitated your going back to Chicago for medical treatment. And she was good to you, wasn't she?
They were certainly understanding of that. And lupus, of course, is an autoimmune condition that causes fatigue, among other things. And I was having to work at a slower pace than I would have liked. And, of course, most of the time I was spending, as you mentioned, was with people who were twice my age or so. And I remember looking around not long after I'd been in Monroeville and thinking not only of a lot of those people, well, their joints hurt too,
yeah,
and they're dealing with some fatigue too. These are my people. In many ways, that ended up being a good fit, and they were very understanding of delays and that kind of thing that were caused
mm-hmm.
by lupus.
How are you now? Are you better?
I'm managing well, thank you.
Great.
It's one of those things you learn to manage and work around.
And are you still in touch with people in Monroeville? Because you became pretty good friends with a number of people there, really.
I am. Those are lifelong friendships, aww, I believe, and such an interesting circle of people in their own right, who were so generous in welcoming me in, and I'll always return to Monroeville to see friends there.
Oh, how nice! Let's go to Judith in Brookfield. Hi, Judith.
Yes, I just wanted to tell the author how much I enjoyed The Mockingbird Next Door, and I'm so glad to hear it's coming out in paperback.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really loved it, and happy to hear you're from Wisconsin. That's even better.
Thank you. Well, and you know, as I wrote in the book, thank you very much for what you said. And my my father grew up in Black River Falls, Wisconsin, and that's a town that's probably only half the size of Monroeville, but it was a point of reference, I think, as I got to know life in Monroeville. And as different as Wisconsin and Alabama are, I think there are some universal things about a smaller community, and that was helpful in getting to understand Monroeville.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Judith, for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. There were some parts of the lives of both Alice and Nell that were extremely traditional. Introduce us to the Methodist minister, Tom, who sounds like a terrific guy. Their friendship with him, the prayers before breakfast, the going to church. Was that a deeply spiritual side of Nell, or was it more cultural? You just went to church on Sundays?
Well, both of them, of course, grew up with a family that was involved in the Methodist Church and themselves remained involved. Alice Lee, at one point, when asked what position she had held in the local church, said, "Well, I've never been pastor." I think she'd held just about every other position you could. And I think it was interesting. I remember Nell saying, in fact, I quote Eudora Welty in the book, talking about how many writers in the South grew up with the words, not just of the Bible, but of the St. James version of the Bible, mm-hmm, in their ears. That's certainly something that Nell Harper talked about. And as far as she was concerned, the St. James version was it. And one of the things she told me early on that really was helpful in getting to understand that area, she said, to understand Southerners, you have to understand their relationship to their church and to their property. And one of the assignments she and Alice had for me regularly was to go visit all kinds of different churches and understand that not only as a spiritual home for many people, but as a social tribe, in a sense. And so they had me go to small churches and large ones. Nell Harper took me to a Pentecostal congregation one Sunday, a little church in an area known as Scratch Ankle, in that area, and wanted to make sure that I visited white congregations and black congregations and got a sense of how deeply that was tied to people's identity in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
We had an eclectic circle of friends, as I mentioned, but many they knew through the Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Steve in Rice Lake. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
Hello. I wanted to, I work with a theater group, and we just did To Kill a Mockingbird here a couple months ago.
Hmm.
And we did a school matinee and had a bunch of middle school kids in there, and it was interesting to feel the energy from the audience as they've never heard the N-word used that way before because they've grown up in such a PC world. And so I'm wondering, are we going to lose classics like this with the world that we're growing up in now?
It was interesting. The actor who since has died, who played Tom Robinson in the local production of To Kill a Mockingbird, some years back, black educator who would put on those overalls and play the role of Tom Robinson, and talked about how painful it was for everyone in the play to revisit the period of segregation and the use of the N-word and the hate that's illuminated in that play, but that he felt it was important for the school children, both black and white, to remember to be taught that that was not so very long ago. That certainly is a book that has been banned at times. It's on the list you often see of books that face challenges, in part because of the use of the N-word.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for your call, and we have a few minutes left. If you'd like to join, 800-486-8655. Tell us the rattlesnake story.
Oh, goodness. Well, being a Wisconsin girl, I was not used to worrying about rattlesnakes.
Right.
And early on one of these adventures that was such great fun, I was on a day trip with Nell Harper and Alice. And Nell Harper, I was reading a sign about Chief Red Eagle Weatherford in that area, and somebody about whom the Lees knew a great deal. So I was absorbed reading the sign, and suddenly I heard Nell Harper say, "Child, get over here immediately." Child, I was in my 40s at the time, I believe. And so without thinking about it, I just darted over to her car, and only when I was safely inside did she inform me that I had nearly given her a heart attack and that there'd been a rattlesnake right there where I was reading the sign. She knew to be on the lookout for those. I didn't. But I remember thinking, well, that was smart, because if she'd said, "Look out," I would have been looking around. But "child, come here immediately" was not a command that I was going to question.
So did you grow used to living in the South? Was it hard to come back and be a Midwesterner again?
Well, it was a place I came to have a lot of affection for. I'm somebody, wherever I am, where I do better if it never gets above about 68 degrees.
Yes.
So Alabama in the summertime especially was a challenge in that way. And, of course, Alice Lee had grown up without air conditioning. Neither of them. Mm. They often did not have the air conditioning on in that home. And so I learned to just furtively wipe the sweat away from my face during conversations and kind of wipe the sweat on my pants so that I wouldn't be seen to be perspiring. I was so happy to be there as long as they wanted me to be.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned, the expressions, I think, was a point of fun for me, and I think for them. They spent quite a bit of time talking about old-time expressions in that area, ones that they had learned from earlier generations. And Nell taught me my favorite one, which I included in the book, and that's "journey proud," as an expression that refers to sort of the nervous excitement the night before undertaking a trip. That makes it hard to sleep. That's being journey proud. And
she faced that all the time before she would go to New York, right?
Yes, and she referred to that the night before she was to take the train back to New York City back in 2005. That was something she did for many years, took the train between New York City and Monroeville.
Hmm. When you talked about how hot it was, I remember that description. It's early on, very early on, I think, in To Kill a Mockingbird, when the temperature is described in probably one of the most beautiful ways I've ever heard or ever read, certainly, what the temperature was like in the town.
Yes, I think you're referring to a passage that's often quoted, and her ability to evoke that place. I think it's one reason that there is the amount of tourism that you referred to earlier. So many people, that's a vivid place to them after reading the book or seeing the movie or both. And so you can see that when people come to that town, they're looking for a glimpse of this place that was evoked so vividly in To Kill a Mockingbird. The Lee home no longer stands on Alabama Avenue, the home where Nell Harper Lee was born in an upstairs bedroom and grew up. Now there's something called Mel's Dairy Dream that has a drive-through, and the home next door where Truman Capote had spent time with his aunts no longer is standing either. The courthouse ends up being, I think, the focus of a lot of the visits people make to Monroeville. The courthouse that is now a museum and also the home of the play every year.
And what is the true story about the publication of your book? They were not happy that it was published, or you were speaking to people who were speaking on behalf of them? Or what's the truth here?
Oh, well, you know, both of them had been so generous with their time and their insights. But in 2011, when the Penguin Press acquired the book and that news went out, a statement shortly after went out attributed to Nell Harper, saying that she hadn't willingly participated in the book. Fortunately, Alice Lee was still practicing law and living at home, and I asked Alice how she wanted to handle that. Alice issued a statement saying that the other had gone out without her knowledge and didn't reflect her feelings or those of her sister. And she also wrote at the time that Nell Harper would sign anything put in front of her by someone in whom she had confidence, and that now she had no memory of having done that. Alice was understandably upset about that, and I think that points to the kind of thing that has been a cause for concern even now in terms of the handling of Nell Harper's
the new
affairs.
Book.
For so many years, Alice was,
Well, you've written a lovely book, and thank you so much. It was a delight to read, and I watch the movie at least once a year and read the book at least every 4 years. It's just gorgeous, isn't it? What a movie.
Oh, and it's one of those that each time I think you still come away having noticed a little something new as well as you might know it.
Yes.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. Our guest
hour,
Marya Mills. The book is just released in paperback now. It's been a New York Times bestseller, The Mockingbird Next Door, Life with Harper Lee. Truly lovely book. Everything's lovely. The story, To Kill a Mockingbird, the film, this book. It's good. Thanks very much to Scotty Myers for producing this hour, to KP Whaley for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios, and thanks, people, for calling. We'll be with you again tomorrow.